Hello and welcome to the Doorstops Podcast with Dr. Cody Price. In case you missed it, previous and future episodes of the Doorstops Podcast can be found on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the Doorstops Podcast so that you don't miss any updates about housing issues in Ohio. You can also follow the podcast and other research that the Office of Housing Policy at the Ohio Housing Finance Agency does by following our Twitter account at Ohio Doorsteps. So let's get started. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and I'd like to introduce you all to my guest today, Bobby Malley. Bobby is the COO and principal of the Model Group, which is an integrated property development, construction, and management company located in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I want to thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Can we start off this conversation kind of you telling me about the Model Group? Specifically, what do you guys do? What do you specialize in?
Well, the mission of our company is to positively transform communities. For us, that takes a couple forms. One is high-impact affordable housing. As we've evolved, we've moved into partnering with organizations that bring not just great property management, but services wrapped into the property management. As our company has evolved, moving into partnering with groups that bring great service on the back end or when the property is open. That can include Cincinnati, like a scholar house model, certainly our senior housing with Episcopal Retirement Services, our family housing with POA now, and some permanent supportive housing with groups like Talbert House. That's one side for us. The other piece is we love to be a part of neighborhood revitalization, and especially when our projects are a part of something much bigger revitalization or transformation context like we've seen in Over the Rhine. And then a lot of times for us, our affordable housing is a part of the neighborhood revitalization. We don't look at typically things like affordable housing or market rate housing. We look at what are all these different pieces that we need for a holistic neighborhood. Often includes both market rate and affordable housing of all different kinds.
Can you explain the history of the Model Group? Like, when did you guys start? Where do you guys focus on development?
Well, our company started in 1978, but it was basically my partner, Art Reckman, who started our company. It was basically art. Art was an entrepreneur, and the company was basically art in the 70s. But as his career began to evolve, he had acquired some low-income housing in Cincinnati, and the properties weren't performing very well. In the 90s, I think a lot of the portfolio was experiencing welfare reform and rents dropping. And then my other partner, Steve, decided they were going to get out of that piece of their portfolio because they weren't happy with the quality. It was becoming more and more difficult to operate. And the city came to them and said, please don't do that. You're one of our better affordable housing providers. And they said, well, we can't operate the way we've been. And so they discovered the tax credit program and were able to shift into creating affordable housing that was indistinguishable from the market rate housing, or often better than the market rate housing in our neighborhoods. And that's really where we got our start into neighborhood revitalization.
Where do you guys really focus geographically? I know you guys have done a lot in Over the Rhine, which we're going to be getting into later in the episode. But do you focus primarily in Cincinnati, or have you expanded?
We're in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. So, for example, right now we're doing a large downtown project, mixed income, mixed use, in downtown Fort Wayne called The Landing. We've done projects as far south as Lexington, northern Kentucky, Lexington. So if you draw a three-hour circle around Cincinnati, I would say that would be a good geographic boundary for us. We're very partnership-driven, and so we've explored going out of that boundary, but we find it's very difficult to be good in relationships in areas much further than that. So we've explored going beyond and come back into that Ohio-Kentucky radius.
How large is your guys' portfolio? I mean, you're doing tri-state area.
Yeah. You know, our portfolio size in terms of own and managed units has fluctuated. I think at its highest point, it was probably 2,500 units. We now have a new partnership with POA, Preservation of Affordable Housing, out of Boston and Chicago, and they have now taken on all the property management for all of our family affordable housing. We're working with them to try to figure out how to bring the right services to the residents in the family affordable housing side. On all the other stuff that we're doing, permanent supportive housing, senior housing, we are not operating those properties because, as we've found, the best properties that we see operate with integrated service and management together. We've been totally shifting to that model, and we're working with service providers who are already doing that. We've done total development since maybe 1990, but most of the work we've done since 2000 is about $750 million in total development costs. That's in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana.
Now, how do you really select your next project or neighborhood that you're working in?
There's so many different ways. I think fortunately for us, at this point, we have developed hopefully a skill set for solving complex problems and often things that other people either don't want to do or just too complicated to figure out. So a lot of the ways our next project comes to us is honestly just like that. They come to us with communities that have a problem and they don't know how to solve it, but they've heard about other things we've done in a nearby community or a city, and they say, hey, can you come see our problem? And we listen to what the problem is and see if it's something we can help with and feel like there is a solution that is feasible. So a lot of the things that come to us come from community problems. One example might be in Evanston in Cincinnati, there was the worst property in Evanston community in Cincinnati. This is probably 6 years ago. And it was this really dense, low-income housing building built like a fortress, looked like a fortress, had the density of a fortress, or an old 50s projects, sort of bad public housing policy, driving as many poor people into a very small space as we can. And there were all kinds of problems with the property, and it was privately owned. The community said, hey, this is a huge problem for us. We don't really know what to do with it. We're not in the business of owning real estate. Certainly don't know how to help the residents who live there now and even explore what might need to be there. So that's just a scenario where they just had a problem, and then it was a complex problem because they're not in the business of operating. They couldn't take it over. They didn't have any resources to buy it, but they just knew they had a real problem property in the middle of their community, in the center. Somebody came to us with that problem, and we were going to de-densify the building. Ultimately, we ended up tearing the building down and putting a lot less units back on site while also maintaining the affordability in a couple other locations within the neighborhood.
You're saying that people are coming to you to do a lot of these projects. So what is really setting you guys apart from other developers that might be doing something similar to what you guys do?
Beyond working with our, I would call high-impact affordable housing with our existing partners, we're following them and helping them accomplish their goals. Piscor Retirement Services on the senior side and groups like the Talbert House, Cincinnati Union Bethel on the permanent supportive housing side. On more the neighborhood revitalization component or mixed income within neighborhood revitalization, I would say what makes us different is that we're not a tax credit developer. We're not a market rate condo developer. We're not a market rate apartment developer. We don't have a product that we take to different communities. We've never done the same project twice, which is highly inefficient. But it gives us the flexibility to look at every community problem differently. We never come in with the plan before we know the problem. So we try to listen first and apply all the things we've learned and done wrong and made mistakes and learned our best practices and worst practices and bring those. Hopefully we start with a listening posture versus here's our solution. Would you like that thing? I think that plus the fact that we are capable and are actively doing different kinds of development. We've done very high-end condos, market-rate apartments, affordable apartments, mixed use, a lot of mixed use, a lot of historic, new construction. So we have a pretty broad skill set, and we like to bring what is appropriate, not what we do. I think that's probably what makes us a little bit different. We're very comfortable bringing affordable housing or market-rate housing that is most appropriate. For example, in Walnut Hills in Cincinnati, they had a lot of affordable housing, but very little new market rate housing, and they wanted new market rate housing. This is a community very welcoming of affordable housing. They just wanted a better balance and a better mix. We're working on our fourth phase in Walnut Hills now with mixed income apartments, but the first phase was 30 market rate apartments, the first market rate in that area in 30 years. That was the most appropriate thing. We didn't come with, here's this. We started with what they were looking for and then decided whether or not we could help them.
And staying more of that smaller scale. I mean, 30 units, in my mind, is a smaller scale type project.
I agree. And that was almost a challenge in and of itself. But because it was an unproven market, we really couldn't do much more than that. There were some gap resources. We had to get state historic tax credits to help make that happen, a city loan. And we really couldn't have done much more. Plus, we were trying to prove there was a market to take foot. We did. And then we've subsequently done three other phases. But we really couldn't start with 200 unit or something like that. So yeah, that's a good point. I think not only project type, but project size. Typically what we're doing is not smaller than 25 or 30 units, but there's a big range in the project size depending on, every community is very different. The size of the community is different. 30 units in a small block is a very different than 200 units in five blocks. It's sort of the relativity of the number of units to the size or density of the community. They're all different, and so we try not to apply one measuring stick to all of them.
You guys have done a lot in Cincinnati, and one neighborhood in particular, Over the Rhine. So can you start off by telling us more about the history of Over the Rhine? I know it's gone through a lot of transition and revitalizations.
Sure. I've had the privilege of working in Over the Rhine for 15 years now. It's unlike any other neighborhood. There are things that you see in Over the Rhine all over the place, but it is a very unique neighborhood. It is the largest collection of Italianate architecture in the country. The largest intact historic district in the country is immediately adjacent to Cincinnati's Central Business District. 20 years ago, you're talking about 700 vacant buildings and 4% home ownership rate. Incredible blight, incredible physical and social problems in the neighborhood. In 2001, there were riots in the neighborhood. An unarmed black man was shot, and the neighborhood in parts was literally on fire. Just huge problems. But looking backwards, to give you some context, in 1900, it was the second most densely populated community outside of the Bronx, New York. 50,000 German immigrants living in this very dense urban neighborhood in Cincinnati. And fast forward again to 2000, got 6,000 or 7,000 people living in that same footprint. So just total devastation. Now, 50,000 was not healthy because there were a lot of tenement housing.
Right.
It was built for maybe 30,000 and you got 6,000 or 7,000 people living there. It's not a healthy situation. As the German immigrants started moving out into, we saw this all over the country after World War I, the kids of the next generation of the immigrants who were living in this squalor and over the Rhine, if they could get out, they did. And so a lot of them moved out into the next ring outside of the urban core and so on. An Appalachian population moved in after that. And then again, similar fact pattern. You had a next generation, if they could get out of that environment, they did. An African-American population moved in, coinciding with some poor public policy of incentivizing too much density of low-income housing in buildings and in one place. And at least our company believes that the over-concentration of low-income housing is not good public policy, both right. In buildings or neighborhoods. And that was certainly something that we saw in Over the Rhine. And a combination of the deteriorating historic buildings, converting commercial spaces to residential units, you're eliminating that commercial activity and commercial ecosystem that's created when you have jobs and commercial ventures, retail and office, and just an over-concentration of low-income housing really devastated the economy in that neighborhood. So many different layers of problems. And just to give you a context of the neighborhood itself, but it is an incredibly architecturally beautiful place with great urban walkable density. Even with a lot of deterioration of some of the buildings, it still, even 20 years ago, was an incredible place.
When did you guys get involved in Over the Rhine?
I would say our company got involved in the 90s through acquisition of some late 80s, early 90s of some low-income housing properties. And that's sort of getting back to the early part of the conversation. They weren't performing well. Welfare reform was changing the nature of the rents. And my partners at the time decided to get out of the business. Ultimately didn't, with the city and other neighborhood folks saying, please don't. You know, want the people who will come after you. And so they said, well, then we have to do something totally different. And that's when we started to deconcentrate and totally transform the profile of the quality of the affordable housing into housing that was indistinguishable from the market rate, especially these beautiful historic structures. When you do that, we are eliminating blight, but becoming an economic stimulus for the neighborhood. And so that affordable housing transformation and changing the profile of that affordable housing in the neighborhood, more appropriately looking at the density and then ultimately bringing in some other types of housing and development, started to change things pretty dramatically.
So with your project that you guys are dealing with, I mean, I assume many partners are involved in the project, that it's not just the model group that's revitalizing Over the Rhine. So can you kind of talk about a lot of the partnerships? How are you guys working together and who's all involved?
Like any urban neighborhood with so many different layers, it's very complex and complicated and lots of different organizations and viewpoints and all layered on top of each other. I think in the last 15 years, there's been over $1 billion invested in this one neighborhood. The only way you can start to reverse a lot of those problems I was discussing is with a lot of resources and a lot of different kinds of projects to change the tide. And a lot of different organizations. 3CDC, the Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, is a private nonprofit partnership between the city and originally a lot of the Fortune 500 companies in Cincinnati who said we need to totally reinvent and bring life back to our urban core. When we're trying to attract and retain talent in Cincinnati, we need a great, thriving urban core that didn't exist 20 years ago, and it does now. The resources that they brought to bear and political capital they brought with that as well. There are some terrific nonprofit, community-based organizations. Over the Ryan Community Housing is a great example of one of those who have been here since the 70s and had a number of different sister organizations that had all these problems, but there were some really great things happening in the neighborhood, and many of them were because of what groups like Over the Ryan Community Housing were already doing in the neighborhood with existing residents. There are a lot of small entrepreneurs who can see the physical beauty and incredible architecture and say, you know, and have been other places around the world and say, this is the residential neighborhood of downtown. So there's tons of little small mom and pop developers. There's a few other development companies that have been involved. Now there are many more development companies involved because the market has taken hold. The city's been a huge partner, and certainly OFA has had a major role in revitalizing Over the Rhine, because it did take a lot of resources to change the profile of a lot of very poor public policy on low-income housing into very high-quality affordable housing that fits into the fabric of the neighborhood. Without OFA, one of two things would happen. One, it doesn't experience this renaissance that it has, or two, the renaissance occurs with complete gentrification and all of the affordable housing is not preserved. One of those two things would have occurred if OFA had not put in the resources that it did, neither of which are good things. And now you have this neighborhood that has become a national model in a lot of ways. We are messy. We are far from perfect. But it has been a national model, both in the amount of investment and the inclusion of a lot of different income brackets. And I think that can work in really dense urban neighborhoods like Over the Rhine.
Can you kind of walk us through maybe some of these development solutions to really revitalize Over the Rhine?
When you have this amount of vacancy and blight, years of poor public policy, scarcely a heartbeat in the commercial ecosystem, big social problems, a lot of crime coming from that blight and vacancy, a lot of distrust in the neighborhood because the development solution comes right out of the problems. And the physical costs of doing these buildings are historic, which just means they're old and they're really they need a lot of work a lot of times. But the last thing I was going to say is I think there was a lot of times this sort of false dichotomy of we're either doing low-income housing or it's a place for really high-end. And I think part of the foundation of a development solution is that neither of those things are good. Neither of those things were really feasible. We needed every tool in the toolbox to revitalize this neighborhood. And to keep it a special place, we needed all different income brackets and types of people living in the neighborhood. That's what makes it so special. It's the flavor of the neighborhood. It's all different kinds of folks with all different kinds of colors and amount of money that they have. And so I think the first part of the development solution was changing the discourse from it's either a place for only low-income residents or a place for only high-income residents. When you have groups who just do one or the other and only talk in those terms, there's zero common ground. Talking about a mix and creating a mix with so many opportunities and buildings is the first step. Beyond that, I think 3CDC was a massive sea change because they brought very low interest, very patient capital, private capital, and leveraged that in very smart ways through strategic land banking, buying up a lot of different parcels with public resources. Certainly, every type of financing has been needed to reinvigorate the life in Over the Rhine. You name it, CDBG, home funds, LIHTC, new market tax credits, state, federal, historic tax credits. There was no market. And so we had to reinvigorate, literally breathe life back into the market so that it could take a foothold again, and it has. And so the amount of subsidy has significantly decreased over the last 15, 20 years as the market has gotten a foothold.
We have all this funding and trying to move into the construction solution. So what's happening in Over the Rhine? I mean, you were talking about a lot of the historic Italianate buildings. Was there a lot of new construction that was happening in the neighborhood, or is a lot of it historic preservation? What's kind of this construction solution that you guys were seeing?
To start to get the market to get a foothold, the people, they want to live in a safe place. They want to visit a safe place for going out to dinner or shopping or whatever it might be. And so you have to have these connected walkable blocks to feel that way. There was enough vacancy and blight in the neighborhood that just redoing the historic structures was not enough. Having these gap teeth in the street smile just doesn't create the physical environment where you feel comfortable walking multiple blocks. And reestablishing that commercial edge, both in taking residential back to commercial on the first floor and building new construction in those gaps so that you create a complete commercial edge to the street front, has been a really important part of reestablishing the neighborhood and the market. So new construction has absolutely been a big part of it. One of the best things going for the neighborhood is its density. You can really get great life and energy in the neighborhood, which we've seen, because of the density. And that comes from building new construction within the gaps to reestablish the built environment the way it would have been originally. Historic rehab, though, I would say has been the foundation of the neighborhood. Cincinnati has probably a disproportionate amount of historic buildings to the rest of the state. The state has a disproportionate amount of historic buildings to the rest of the country. And the historic credit has been a massively important tool for Cincinnati and for Ohio. We don't have beaches. We don't have 70-degree weather all year round. We don't have 300 days of sunshine. We have other great things. I moved away and moved back to the Midwest for a reason, but I think that the historic credit for that reason has been really important. And the historic rehab, which makes the historic rehab sort of the foundation of the physical revitalization, that absolutely is true.
What were some of the biggest lessons learned from implementing this project?
To me, some of the big lessons learned are that affordable housing can be a part of the economic revitalization if it's done really well. If it's done to quality that is from the outside, you couldn't tell if it was affordable or market rate or whatever, can absolutely be a part of the neighborhood revitalization in addition to providing critical affordable housing. The second big lesson learned to me is that the balance is really important, not just from, and again, when you have complete devastation economically, you need to bring every tool in the toolbox to bear. And balance from a market, condos, new homeowners, apartments that are market apartments, and high quality, affordable housing in balance has been what has made this neighborhood thrive, not just from the physical revitalization, but from the retaining of its soul and character. I think retaining what makes it great is the diversity of the neighborhood. So that'd be number two. And then I think the third is just, again, bringing back the incredible importance of the commercial space in the neighborhood. Bringing back that first floor commercial life to the neighborhood is so important to create opportunities for businesses, which are opportunities for jobs for people who live in the neighborhood who can walk to work. It creates life on the street, which creates a sense of safety. It creates places where people want to not only go to when you live there, but visit, which again creates more people and more life. Safety comes from numbers of people. We all like to be around people. That makes us feel safe, and sort of chicken and the egg. But reestablishing the commercial edge to the street is probably the other big lesson learned, I think. And you see that all over the country. The best places we like to be in, whether we know it or not, are the ones that feel like the buildings are connected to the street.
And I think one of the things that we are kind of most interested in is just how can we really replicate what was done in Over the Rhine and other distressed neighborhoods or other neighborhoods in general?
There's so many different factors that have been part of the revitalization of Over the Rhine that, because every neighborhood is different with its own problems, it can take different pieces of what happened in Over the Rhine as a good lesson learned or a good something to apply to their own neighborhood. Not every neighborhood's as dense as Over the Rhine, but that means you might not have as many of the big hurdles to overcome. I think, to me, going back to those lessons learned, that high-quality, affordable housing, in terms of urban development, good commercial life on the street, and having good balance in your neighborhood, those are things that work for any urban neighborhood with density. To me, those lessons apply to any urban neighborhood. And I think when you've got groups working collaboratively, even though we don't always agree, like 3CDC model and OTRCH and a lot of other organizations in the city, OFA, I think that from that collaboration, you have a much better chance for balance, and that 1 + 1 can equal 4 versus working at odds, having this false dichotomy of market rate or low-income housing. They don't have to be at odds if they're woven together.
How can we ensure that this stays a revitalization project and doesn't turn into a gentrification project?
Yeah.
How can we preserve the affordability of the new affordable homes that are being built in Over the Rhine?
So the first challenge was bringing life back to the neighborhood, and the market has taken hold, and now prices and rents and homeownership, they've all skyrocketed. Before, you saw rents of well below $1 a foot in the market. Rents are now up closer to $2 a foot in 10, 11, 12 years. Really aggressive rises in prices. And I think that your question is a good one, because the next phase or the next stage of life for this neighborhood, a lot of people are talking about not just displacing people physically, but pricing people out of the neighborhood is a huge concern. Because one of the things that makes it so great is the different types of people you see in the neighborhood who live next to each other, work next to each other, buy stuff next to each other. And that's a huge concern. If it's just left to market forces and someone can get a really high rent, if there's no other concern about neighborhood balance or anything like that, then inclusion of affordable housing takes both local public policy and decisions from people with resources like OFA to say, this is worth continuing to invest in, not to help bring it back, but now to make sure that as it goes forward, that affordable housing can remain a part of the neighborhood and it doesn't get excluded going forward. The other thing is that, you know, our workforce, our company base, we can't push our workforce out into the burbs forever because the cost of getting to and from work becomes a huge factor in being able to retain the workforce. I believe that your question is a critical one, and we've all felt the shift from how do we bring this neighborhood back to full life to, okay, it's happening, the market has definitely changed. How do we make sure that we are very purposeful about keeping affordable housing a part of the next phase of development? You see groups like 3CDC change their focus from getting things off the ground to a lot of what they're doing now is how do we include affordable housing in what we're doing going forward. So I think having groups like that, working with hopefully people like us and Over the Rhine Community Housing to talk about, all right, let's be very purposeful. The next 200 units we're talking about, where's the affordable housing? What level of affordable housing? Can we include different segments of affordable housing, not just very low, not just very high, but some workforce components, 60% to 120% AMI? That's really been missing from a lot of this. So I think that's kind of the next, just being very purposeful about talking about it, including it, and then certainly some public policy efforts to make sure that is included. Otherwise, if all hands are off, the market will do what it wants to do without affordable housing.
What do you really see for the future of Over the Rhine? Do you guys have a lot more projects planned for the neighborhood?
Because the market has taken hold, it allows a lot more projects to be feasible and significantly less gap resources needed to do that. Two guys in a truck can now buy a building in Over the Rhine, put money and energy into it, and make a profit, which wasn't possible 20 years ago. That means the pace of development in the neighborhood has quickened greatly, and I think that will continue over the next 20 years. There's still a lot of blight and vacancy to redevelop in the neighborhood. With all the energy, effort, and resource we're talking about, we still haven't seen the revitalization affect over half of the neighborhood. So there's still a significant amount left. I just think the pace at which that will occur will be significantly less than what we saw sort of getting off the mat up to where we are now. I think you'll see a bigger diversity in the types of projects, more office space, more people choosing to move their companies to the neighborhood because it's such a special place, which then just puts more pressure on people wanting to live there, rents,
right,
but also creates a really vibrant place because you got so many people wanting to be there. Creates demand for the commercial restaurants and the shops that are fun to visit, which adds to that vibrancy. And I do think the right people are at the table talking about making sure affordable housing's a part of that conversation. So I think we're super excited about the next 20 years because the last 20 have been really freaking hard to do. Absolutely worth it, but not that it won't be hard going forward, but I think we have a different place to jump off from than we did 20 years ago.
After everything that we've really discussed today, what are some major takeaways that you would have for our listeners?
One takeaway would be just come check out the neighborhood. If you haven't been, it's a fabulous place, and it is very unique in Ohio just with the density and the architectural fabric that exists. It does look and feel very different. You know you're in Cincinnati when you're in the neighborhood. It's not a generic built environment. It's what sort of separates us from a lot of other peer cities. And I think you can see it. You can walk the neighborhood. You can feel it, eat it, smell it. And I think just physically visiting the neighborhood would be something that interests you, I think would be absolutely worth your while. To me, that would be step one. Because there's a lot of things, a lot of great things you could steal from the neighborhood to take back to your own communities.
And finally, if you could have everybody read one book, what would it be?
Well, I'm an English lit major, so I love books. And that would be very difficult to answer. And this is probably cheating, but my favorite historical book would be Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin. And that reads like a novel. It's an incredible book about Lincoln and his cabinet, bringing people who were his political enemies into his cabinet and converting them into strong allies. Incredible time, incredible leader. And then it would be a toss-up between Catcher in the Rye and Farewell to Arms to me on the fiction side. I've been reading a lot of history lately, but those are probably three of my, if I had to pick a fiction and nonfiction, those would be my picks.
No, those are good options. Well, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us. To my listeners, please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the Doorstops podcast so that you don't miss any updates about housing issues in Ohio. You can also follow the podcast and other research that the Office of Housing Policy at the Ohio Housing Finance Agency does by following our Twitter account at Ohio Doorsteps. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and this is Doorsteps.